Well, I've been looking forward to this day. I get to tell you all about Sri Ram, Sita Ram. Great, great pleasure for me. In fact, it's a great honor. I know it is. Can I do this, Prabhu? Is that okay? Oops.
It's a bit wrecked,
I'm afraid. It's a bit wrecked, huh? Okay. So, I'm giving a talk entitled The Truth Behind the Glory of Lord Ram. Hopefully. And, Yada yada hi dharmasya glane bhavati bharata vyutthanam dharmasya tadatmanam srijamyam. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chadushkritam dharma samsthapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. And the most important verse of these three: Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvataha tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mam eti. So, Arjuna. This is Bhagavad Gita, 4th chapter. Yada yada hi dharmasya, whenever and wherever there's a decline, a glani, a falling apart, a decline, a discombobulation. Of dharma, of religion, of proper behavior, of virtue, of right action. Yada yada dharmasya ganir bhavati bharata abhyutthanam adharmasya. At that time, tadatmanam srijamyaham, I myself appear. These are God's words, Krishna's words in Bhagavad Gita. I come. Why? Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chadushkritam. To annihilate the negative forces. Anything, anyone, any belief, philosophical system, false laws, Maya. He knows. Illusion. And to reestablish the principles of dharma, virtue. Religion. Oh, religion. You mean like when you join a religion or you believe in a certain religion? No. Not that kind of religion. Really? I thought that was the only kind there was. No. It's only religion if it evokes a certain degree, a certain level of behavior. You can't claim to belong to religion and then act opposite from its principle. How is that religion? It isn't. You can claim to belong to any religion you like, but the deed tells it all. Then janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvataha. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities. So Krishna, do you think I just come out of a womb? Like you? I'm the same? And then I die? I'm human? My appearance is not much different than anyone else's? You're mistaken. It's janma karma. Me divyam. Mine is transcendental. Evam yo veti tatvataha. Anyone who understands this and believes this to be true about God himself, tyaktva deham, once giving up the body, punar janma naiti, he never takes birth again. So these avatars, appearances of God in different forms, incarnations, are for different purposes, but the essential same quality is to reestablish the principles of virtue, of Dharma, on the earth, and wipe out the negative forces. Are there any negative forces operating in our world at the present time? Oh my goodness, there are some. No doubt. So, it is also mentioned in the Vedas that there are many, many avatars. Well, how many are there? As many as the waves in the ocean, is what it says. That seems like quite a few. Yeah, well, there's a lot of us down here in the material world. We need help. We need rescuing from the ocean of repeated birth and death. So many avatars, many incarnations come. Now, we may not be familiar with them all because there are so many, but we are certainly familiar with some of the main ones or major ones. In fact, all the incarnations of God are predicted or outlined or mentioned in the Shastra, in the sacred Vedas. They're all there. So if anybody comes up to you and claims to be God or says, I am an avatar, has anybody ever said that to you, by the way?
Yes.
Yes, me too. Me too. More than one person. I've heard from many people, oh, this one's an avatar. Good. Which verse is she mentioned in the book? I'll look her up right now. So, Ram, or Ramachandra, he's popularly called as well, he appeared in Treta Yuga. The universe is divided into four ages, or yugas, or epochs, or eras. So we have the Golden Age, the Silver Age, the Bronze Age, the Iron Age. So the Golden Age is Satya Yuga. Silver Age is Treta. The Bronze Age is Dvapara. And the Iron Age is Kali. We are currently in the Iron Age of Kali, the time of quarrel and hypocrisy, among many other things along those lines. A lot of difficulty right now with consciousness and awareness and behavior that results from a low state of consciousness and a low state of awareness. Okay, fine. So when did Ram appear? He appeared in Treta Yuga. Okay. When was that? Well, if we're 5,000 years into Kali Yuga, the Iron Age, right now, as we sit here, we've expended 5,000 years of the Iron Age. There's 427,000 years of the Iron Age remaining. So then we got to go back all of Dwapara Yuga, which was the Bronze Age. So that was 864,000 years. Add that on. And then we got to go into Treta Yuga, which extends for 1,296,000 years. Okay, get out your calculator. So when did he appear? He appeared about 2,165,000 years ago on Earth.
Well, we've discovered that civilization has just appeared within the last...
Have you now?
I don't know what books you're reading. We use conjecture, and we speculated on the data.
Oh, okay. Well, you must have missed this one.
No, we have no record of that.
No? Well... Actually, You do have a record of it. You missed it. Entirely. How on earth did you miss it? Well, we find out in the Ramayana, the life of Ram, that a bridge was built from South India, Rameshwaram, it's there today, Rameshwaram, and built across the sea to Sri Lanka. This is north at the top of the page. That is India on the left side of the page, part of India. And that is Sri Lanka on the right side of the page. Now, if you see right here, right in there, it says in the Ramayana that a bridge of stones was built. This is a satellite photograph, my friends. It is current. And there's your bridge. And the stones have sunk under the sea. So there it is. 2 million years ago. We have not seen this data. Well, that's okay. You can catch up. We're patient. It's there. Okay. Now, Ram appeared in North India in a place called Ayodhya. Ayodhya is still there, right? And Ayodhya is about, as Prabhupada said, about 500 miles northeast of New Delhi. And what does this word mean, Ayodhya? That is the city, or the city kingdom at the time. What does Ayodhya mean? Unassailable. Invincible. Now, Ram was so popular as a just, enlightened monarch. This is the best example, arguably, of enlightened monarchy and rulership, historically speaking. Was the life of Ram, the Rama Ayana, the life of Ram. So Ram's story, his pastimes, his history, the things he did while he was on the planet is everywhere, almost. What do you mean everywhere? I didn't see it here in Ireland. No, you might have to go a little further east to Asia. Today, you can find the iconography and the history and the stories of Ram Lila, Ram's pastimes, in where? I made my list here. Of course, India, Malaysia, Singapore, Vietnam, Cambodia, Bhutan, Indonesia, China, Japan, Nepal, Sri Lanka. I think I missed a few. And in places like Bali, it's all based on Ram Lila. Their whole method of being and worship. They call themselves Hindus. But it's pretty much all Ram iconography. So here we are 2 million years, not 2,000 years since the life of Christ. No, 2 million. And all this iconography is still there. It's still present. That's pretty impressive, I'd say. Who's the most famous person in or out of the universe? God is. You know, hard to beat. Okay, so Ramayana is the book that tells the story of Ram. There are actually a few different versions of the Ramayana, and there are even folk tale versions of it in different places that you go in India, like Andhra. Well, that's one place, but there's a few. And the main one, or the one that we tend to adhere to here in Krishna consciousness, is the Valmiki Ramayana. Valmiki is the sage that wrote down the story. And essentially, there are two primary themes in the Ramayana. Number one, the effect of enlightened monarchy or leadership in accordance with Dharma. The effect it has on a community, on a kingdom, on the people, on the citizenry. What happens when you have a truly enlightened leader? The best form of government, which may come as a shock to most of us, is enlightened monarchy. You know, I used to say in the old days that the king is the representative of God on earth. Have you heard that one? So technically, that would mean any king would be a representative of God on earth. Yeah, I guess. It doesn't play out so well in this day and age, does it? I can't make you believers based on that. No. The king must be enlightened. He must be an initiated soul, at the very least. Do we have that nowadays? I don't, maybe you can tell me of one or two that you know of. I can't think of any. So then we have reverted to what we call democracy as to be currently the most advanced form of government, because everybody gets their say. People who don't know anything about government get to vote. Well, that's pretty good. It's pretty fair. Everybody gets a vote. Based on what? How you feel today? Your knowledge of politics and ethics? Based on what? History? Your knowledge of history? You're a civil engineer? You know how to set up a city? Based on what? What's the qualification? Do we have education? Are we enlightened about these things? I'm not criticizing you. I'm just wondering out loud, what is our qualification? And we elect people into positions of power who have absolutely no experience in these areas, no education in these areas, and they become the prime minister. How's that working for us, by the way, in a democratic society? You know, sometimes you look at a dictatorship, and sometimes they're even better off in some of these dictatorships. Look what happened in Iraq. We're going to remove the dictator and set up democracy. Oh, thank God. I was so worried about that. Those poor Iraqis. Remove that dictator. Get him out of there. That son of a gun. Well, they did. And it's just Shangri-La there now. It's the most wonderful place. You should go to Iraq. Because it is just working like a spinning top. Not. Anyway, I won't get embedded in all of that. I'm just food for thought. Ram is an enlightened leader. Okay, so the first part is enlightened monarchy, and the second theme in the Ramayana is the love story. Can we not make these children be somewhat more quiet? Is it possible? Thank you. Love story. Everybody likes a love story. Well, the love story in this one is kind of interesting because it's got two sides, doesn't it? It's a dual manifestation of a love story in light and in darkness. Right? And in these two primary themes, so much is learned. I mean, they're not going to give me near enough time to tell you all about how wonderful this story is. And what it means for us. but I will forge ahead. The effects of enlightened monarchy. When Ram was in charge of Ayodhya, when he became the king, he was the prince regent, he was the heir apparent, the Yuvaraj, when he became the king, this is what happened in Ayodhya. Think about this. I want you to think about our world now, different countries, where you live, where you used to live, where you plan to live, and make a little comparison. Make a couple of notes in your mind. Rain always appeared on time. There was no drought, pestilence, famine. There were no accidents. Peace and prosperity was everywhere. All the citizens were happy, virtuous, learned in the Vedas, or at least aware of the Vedas, of the deeper spiritual truth and reality of the world, and free from greed. They were happy. Okay, I said that. They were wealthy. Everybody was wealthy. Everybody had wealth. Like crazy wealth? No. They had everything they could want and were all happy with their lot in life. I've been to India many, many times. I've been to lots of places, but in India sometimes you'll see the poorest children running around the streets in rags, I mean literally in rags, and they are just the happiest kids around. They're laughing and running and playing, and you can make friends with them, and you know, they're very sweet, sweet children. They have nothing, but they're happy with their lot in life, you know. Of course, then you see commercials on TV that say, you too can put shoes on these poor children. Well, it's actually better for you to run around barefoot than to run around in shoes anyway. Most people don't know that. We were raised differently here, naturally. Back to Ayodhya. They had all the food and domestic animals that they needed because everything is essentially an agricultural society. So is ours. We just get disconnected from it because everybody moves to the city to find a job. But none of us can live. We can't eat without agriculture. I won't even get into that because Prabhupada goes on and on and on about the need to grow your own food. No person was predatory, miserly, cruel, ignorant, or atheistic. None of them. All were cheerful, warm, friendly, and they exhibited good character. No one was without gold, jewelry, gemstones, and flower garlands. And you thought jewelry was a luxury in life. It's not. It's expected. You're supposed to have it. All of you. They dressed attractively with beautiful clothing. You mean like, what's this stuff? Cheap stuff to get. Polyester. Nice polyester stuff. I got it cheap over at Penny's. Looks lovely on you. Just don't get it near a match. Because you'll go up. No, no. Really good quality clothing. Like wool. Like cotton. Like linen. Like silk. Beautiful clothing. You should be wearing it, too. Dressed attractively, used, everybody wore sandalwood or various other natural fragrances and oils and scents such as jasmine, musk. What else do you like?
Rose.
Yeah. No one ate impure food.
Oh. Well,
that's a big one. What does that one mean? Well, here in Krishna Consciousness, we offer all of our food to Krishna. We offer it to God first, before we eat it. We offer it to God on the altar. He eats it, and we take the remnants. That's the concept. So the food becomes divinely blessed, having been offered to God. Actually, everything becomes divinely blessed once you offer it to Krishna, once you offer it to God. You can offer it to your own conception of God too, if you like. So that purifies food. The Jews and the Muslims think you should not eat pork because pork is impure. I heard a lecture from Prabhupada the other day. He said the same thing. Do not eat pork. It's impure. Pigs don't have any sweat glands. It's something to do with that effect. Ideally, you shouldn't eat meat. And for absolutely, you should not eat beef, the cow. Why? Because the cow is a symbol of the mother. She gives milk. Killing and eating the cow for her blood rather than keeping her alive for her milk means to destroy the mother. When you destroy a key symbol of the mother, you think symbols don't mean anything? You think it has no repercussion? You destroy the mother cow and you have beef burgers. And then you destroy Mother Earth. Is she not too our mother? You make this connection? Impure food. They didn't need any impure food. Everyone gave in charity, and all the citizens exercised control over their minds. They weren't out of control. Everyone had an altar in their home and worshipped God through sacrifice. Also in their home. When they come here to the temple, we worship together, we chant, we take prasadam, we listen to some shastra. But this too must be done at home. At home, there must be an altar. Very important. And how do you worship? Well, there's so many ways to worship. You know that. So we say, chant Hare Krishna. Why? Because nobody wants to worship God in Kali Yuga, in the Iron Age. They're too busy. Our minds are not very peaceful, very attuned to spirituality. So the easy way to do it is chanting the names of God. That's all you have to do in this age. God has given us this blessing through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and made it very easy for us to offer this sacrifice. None of the citizens were selfish, immoral, nor were they thieves. They wouldn't think of stealing anything from another person. And all lived long lives devoted to virtue and truth. As such, they were never deprived of their spouse, their children, or their grandchildren. What does that mean? It is considered to be inauspicious. It is considered to be negative karma if your child dies before you. Or if your grandchild does not outlive you. This is bad karma. At the very least, it's highly unfortunate. And in an enlightened society, that should not happen. So if you want to check and compare to the society we live in, some of the points that have been made here, we're a long way off. You may argue, yes, that was the Silver Age, we're in the Iron Age. Yes, you are right. I can't defend that. But this is the higher standard that was existing on Earth through the life and the kingdom, the Raj of Lord Ram. Okay, let's look at the two themes of the love story first. Sita and Ram. I like Sita and Ram. When in your relationship God is included. I know you're not God. I know you're not Ram. I know you're not Sita. But you are divine. The divine is within you. When you go into relationship, we must include God. Do most people do that? Factually, no. They don't. It's a relationship generally between a man and a woman. Nature. Okay. But there's another spot. There's another chair there that's empty. You thought there was only two chairs. There's not. There's three chairs. And that's God. You have to invite God in to the relationship. It's not two poles, masculine, feminine, positive, negative. I don't mean negative in a negative manner. Negatively charged. Positively charged. And up there, top of the triangle, top of the pyramid, who's that? That's God. Without Him, then what? Well, you got two people trying to coexist together. Divorce rate, 50%, something like that, you know. Is it easy? Not easy. We all know that. It's challenging. But you bring the divine energy in, it shifts everything. What do you mean, I'm not the center of my marriage? No. Well, then my wife's the center of my marriage. Not exactly. That's what she always tells me. She's wrong. Well, who's the center of my marriage then? God is the center of your marriage. Krishna. Ram. Allah is the center of your marriage. Well, I don't do that. Start and see what happens. I invite you to try. So Sita and Ram, they are divine beings. I'll get to that part. So when God energy or spiritual energy or spirituality is included in the marriage, then the marriage cannot be opposed to Dharma. The marriage will be a reflection of Dharma. This is what we learn from Sita and Ram. So what is a marriage like if it's a reflection of Dharma? Dharma means virtue, truth, integrity, honesty. What you see is what you get. There's no dark corners or shadows. There's no lying. There's no pretending. There's no dishonesty in such a marriage. Dharma means to act in harmony with your purpose. Your dharma is your nature. Act in harmony together. Why did these two people come together? If your marriage doesn't better you as a person, then what are you doing? Why are you married? Why are you spinning your wheels and wasting time? Marriage is supposed to do two things, or one of two things, according to the Vedas. Srila Prabhupada has mentioned this numerous times. Number one, it's for babies. It's to populate the earth. Have children. That's number one. If you can't have children, why are you marrying? Well, number two, that's why. Oh, what's number two? To grow, to evolve, to learn, to become a more conscious being, a more conscious soul. That is the purpose of coming together in relationship. What if neither of these two circumstances is met? Again, then what are you doing? Why are you married? Well, I get lonely. Okay. Yeah, we all know how that feels. But that's what it's for. In harmony with Dharma, with your nature. If you're married to someone who does not recognize who you are as a person, as an individual, or demeans it, or diminishes it, or criticizes it, how is that helping you, that marriage, to blossom as a soul, as an individual in this lifetime? Tell me, how is that helping you? Is that helping you, or is that dismantling you? Is that building you up or tearing you down? Love brings increase. Love brings growth. Love brings joy. Love brings recognition. I say to my clients, I'm in a new relationship. I think it's my soulmate. Oh, very good. Does he see you? Does he recognize you? What? Does he get you? Yeah, I feel like he does. Good. Well, he sounds better than the soulmate you told me about last month. Progress. We're progressing. I don't think they come monthly, by the way, soulmates. But, yeah, you never know. Okay. A deep abiding love goes beyond the physical. It goes beyond the current individuality in this life and connects with the soul of the beloved. That is a spiritual marriage, my friends. Most people get married because, oh, she's so good looking. I am so attracted to her. And vice versa. That's what she says about the man. And that's a gender thing. We all know about that. We all know how that works. Boy, girl, man, woman. Okay. Is that the reason to get married? Will we get a spiritual marriage out of that one? No. It's not enough. Something wrong with that? No. It's only one small element. Then we have to see the individual, the person, the actual person in this lifetime, the current identity. What is this? Who is this person? What are they trying to achieve? How are they trying to fulfill themselves in this current lifetime? You say, well, that's not important. Oh, yeah, it is. Well, it's not important to me. No, but it's important to her. It's important to him. Now, that will make your marriage way better if you do that, won't it? Will that make a spiritual marriage? No, it won't. It's not enough. Yeah, but I'm... Yeah, I know you did. You're getting up there now. You're floating up there. We're getting up to the right level. We're going up in the atmosphere. What about the soul? What soul? The soul in the body that you're looking at through those beautiful eyes. That's soul. You must recognize the soul. The soul is on the journey. Lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. We're still here. We're still journeying. Why? We're still looking for something. Are you back again? Yeah. Yeah, me too. Well, I thought you were going to get... Well, I don't know, man. I took a wrong turn. I don't know what happened. But you said... Never mind what I said, you know. Don't give me a hard time. It's not easy down here, you know. God, I know. It isn't. I took a wrong turn. Okay. Are you going to help this soul get out of here? Out of where? Prison. Repeated birth and death. Over and over and over. How much is enough? I'll tell you something right now, my friends. You're sitting here. We're all sitting here in this temple with people on this level of consciousness. Do not think for a minute that you've had anything less than a few thousand lifetimes, because you haven't. You've had several thousand lifetimes. So let us all determine that we're close to getting it right. So what is your job in the context of the relationship, like C10 Ram, to recognize your beloved and help that soul evolve to become free of repeated birth and death? Better yet, in Krishna consciousness, we say, yeah, that's nice, but not good enough. Well, what could be better? Love. Yeah, I do love him. Not enough. Universal love. Love of humanity. All the way up to love of God. That's the journey you're on with your partner. And if one of you is on it and the other one isn't, if neither of you are on it, well, you wouldn't be sitting here in this room, I can tell you that. Not unless somebody invited you for a nice vegetarian feast. So, no problem. You're more than welcome. But if both of you are on the same journey, then what? Oh, my goodness. That's what we want. That's what's possible. Sita was called, another name for Sita is Ayonija. Ayonija, right? What's it mean? What's a yoni? Anybody know what a yoni is? It means womb or vagina. It's yoni. A-yoni-ja. A means none, not. Ja means birth. She did not appear out of the womb. Where did she come from? Her father, Dasharatha, the king, was plowing a field with a golden plow that they were going to have a big yajna, a big sacrifice in the field. Is going to be the sacrificial arena, and from the furrow of the field a little baby appeared. That was Sita Devi, and she became the daughter of the king. Did I say Dasharatha?
Yes.
Sorry, Janaka. My mistake. Maharaj Janaka from Mithila. So she is also known as Janaki. Yeah. So she did not appear. She appeared out of the earth. That's a very unusual birth, isn't it? Yes. So she's the daughter of whom? Tell me. Whose daughter is she? Who's her mom? Mother Earth. Beautiful. So she met Ram. Ram appeared out of... Ram is also a child of sacrifice. Dasharath, the king of Ayodhya, was getting on in years. He had three wives. None of them produced... The reason he had three wives, he kept getting a new one because he had no children. No sons to carry on. Anyway, even after three wives, no success. And he was getting on in years, so they called the sage Sringi. And they did a special, he told him to do this special yajna and sacrifice. And there would be a pot of nectar that would be produced out of the sacrifice, which happened. And he took it and he gave it to Dasharath and said, give it to your wife Kaushalya, your main queen. So he gave it to Kaushalya, the main queen, and the other two girls were looking on. What about us? So Kaushalya divided in half and gave half to Kaikeyi. So that's 50-50. And what about Sumitra? She's sitting there. Where's mine? So then Kaikeyi divided hers in half and gave it to Sumitra. All of them had sons shortly thereafter, after being impregnated by Dasharath. And to Kaushalya was born Ram. Lakshman was born to, Bharata was born to Kaikeyi, and the twins, Lakshman and Shatrughna, were born to Sumitra. It's explained in the Ramayana that Ram, as far as Vishnu Tattva, the energy of God, how much of the presence of God does he have within him, is 50%. Ram is 50% human and 50% Godhead. Bharata is 25% God. Lakshman and Shatrughna, the twins, are 16% God energy each. So that's how it all played out. Now, there's no time for me to go into so many things I wanted to tell you about, so... Everything that Ram and Sita did together when they were married, it was according to religious principle, according to Dharma. What happened was Ram was banished to the forest for 14 years. He was supposed to be the king, and he was due to take the throne the next day, was the coronation. This was now at age 27. They got married at age 16. All the boys, the four boys, appeared out of the womb. They were born on the same day. Ram was the oldest. Mm-hmm. Three different wives. They impregnated at the same time. The children were born on the same day. When they were 16, they met Sita, her sister Urmila, and the two cousins, and the marriages were arranged, and all four got married to the two sisters and two cousins. Then they lived together peacefully for many years. I'm omitting all kinds of stuff. And then it was time for the coronation at age 27. And Ram was due to become king. Ram was very, very well loved. I told you what the kingdom was like already in Ayodhya, being governed by an enlightened ruler. And just before it was all to take place, everybody was happy because everybody loved Ram and respected him. There was a, how shall we say, a device that happened whereby Kaikeyi was, her mind was poisoned by her, Queen Kaikeyi's mind was poisoned by her assistant, Mantara, and said, "Why are you letting Ram take the throne? You don't want Ram to take the throne. You want your own son, Bharata, to take the throne." Kaikeyi says, "Well, I love Ram. We all love Ram. He's the oldest. He should take the throne. There's no problem." "Yeah, well, what's going to happen to Bharata once Ram takes the throne?" So she, in this way, she was stirring up dissent in the mind of Kaikeyi. And Mantara says, "Don't you remember you have these two boons, these two promises your husband made to you many years ago that you put on hold?" "Oh, thank you very much. I won't take them now. I'll take them in the future. Ask him for these two things." "Well, what on earth should I ask him for?" "Number one, that your son will be put on the throne tomorrow, Bharata. Otherwise, your son will suffer if Ram becomes king." "It's all nonsense. It's all nonsense." But it was a device to achieve something, because he wouldn't have suffered. "Well, what's the second thing I should be asking for?" "The second thing you should be asking for is to banish Ram to the forest for 14 years. He'll live like an ascetic in the forest. He'll wear bark, not princely robes, made out of silk and wool." This is what happened. You may say, "Well, that's terrible." Yes and no. Why did Ram come? Dharma samsthapanartaya, to establish Dharma. Vinashaya cha dushkritam, to destroy the darker forces, the demons, the bad guys. So in order for that to happen, he was thrust into the forest for exile for 14 years. And at that time, he destroyed many, many demons and dark forces that were trying to overthrow the sages who lived in the forest, who were doing sacrifices and different things for the welfare and the benefit of humanity, and the demons and dark characters were interfering with all of this. So ultimately, that's why Ram came. So they had to get him into the forest somehow, and that's how the story unfolded. So Ram was told, "You will not..." Now, she had to ask her husband for this, which broke his heart. Maharaj, the king, Dasharatha, this broke his heart, because he wanted Ram to be king. Everybody did. He said, "You can't do this. You can't ask me such a thing. This is a terrible thing. If you're the king, if you're a Kshatriya warrior, if you're who you say you are, you have to do what you promised. This is Dharma." Back in those days, Dharma was strictly followed. You could say, "Yeah, well, I didn't know you meant that." Doesn't matter. You offered. So he had to do it. He had to not go back on his word, the king. He told Ram, "You're not going to be king. Bharata is going to be crowned tomorrow, and you have to go to the forest for 14 years. You know what Ram said? He said, "Yes, Father, as you wish."
You wouldn't say that to your dad now, would you? You let him have it.
Are you out of your mind, Dad? But all my friends are going. Why can't I go?
Right.
No. He left. Lakshman, who was very close to him, his brother, the one of the twins, he went. He wouldn't go anywhere. His job, he was on Earth to protect Ram, period. And his wife, Sita, she went too. She said, the wife is the shadow of the husband. She must go where he goes.
Whoa. Boy, that's a controversial statement in this day and age, isn't it?
I'm the shadow of what? Are you kidding me? I'm the bright light around here. Yes, yes, dear. You are, and you are my better half. There's no question about it. But you're supposed to sort of shadow me, you know. Yeah. You don't want to shadow him? You don't want to reflect your husband? Then why are you with him? Sita would not allow herself to be separated from her husband. My time. Sita got kidnapped. After 13 years in the forest, everything went fine. In the 14th year, Sita was kidnapped by the great demon Ravan, who had set up shop in Sri Lanka after he kicked out his brother, Kuvera. He drove him away from his kingdom, stole his Pushpa Yatra, his flower airplane, and took over. Ravan's very powerful demon. And he heard about Sita and how she was the peerless beauty in the entire world was Sita. She is so desirable, why don't you have her? And Ravan's harem, his harem, was extensive. All the most beautiful women in the world. And you don't have Sita. So he couldn't get Sita because Sita was married to Ram and she was faithful. It had to be a trick, a stratagem. He disguised himself as a Brahmin, as a priest, as a holy man. And then Ram, of course, had to come and rescue Sita. So the shadow side of the love affair, of the love story in Ramayana, is Ravan's lust for Sita, to have Sita, to take Sita, but against Dharma, against proper behavior, against the benefit of Sita, against her will, against everything. When sexuality, sensuality, and relationship are all about my satisfaction and not so concerned with the partner or to the detriment of others or to the detriment of either person in the relationship, it's against Dharma. What did Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Dharma virudo bhuteshu kamo smi bharatarshava. He says, Krishna says, I am sex life according to religious principle, according to Dharma. God is, people say, well, God made us like this. Yes. Correct. But sex indulgence or sexual connection is not meant to be rooted in ego and dominance and self-satisfaction or selfishness. That's adharma, non-dharma. You know. Did Ravan rape her? No. Why? Because he was actually raised Brahmin. He was he never raped any woman. He'd only take them if they would agree to be with him. Wow. It's not like it is nowadays, is it? No. No. So he respected her. He just kept trying to draw her in for an entire year. She sat under the Ashok tree out in the courtyard. And she wouldn't give in to him. Hanuman came. They say Hanuman. Monkey god. Hanuman is a Vanara, which comes from two words, Vana and Nara. What's a Vana? It's the forest, no? And a Nara is a man, a human. So what's a forest man? Well, a forest man could be a monkey. A forest man could be a tribal person, yeah? So are they just monkeys? No. They were kind of a combination of a human monkey. And some of them were actually very highly born because Hanuman's father was Vayu, the wind god. So Hanuman was an incredible being and a scholar and spoke many, many languages and highly powerful. So he found Sitika's. We didn't know where she was. Ravan took her off in the airplane. No one knew. Had to find her. Where was she? Sri Lanka. Being held. So Hanuman says, come, I'll take you out. She says, no, I cannot go. Why? Because we must let my husband come for me and rescue me. That is his duty. We cannot take this from him. We cannot take this opportunity from him. That's not right. Talk about adherence to Dharma. So, that's what happened. He killed Ravan. He rescued Sita. Everybody said, no, that's no, they're not going to get off that easy. She was in this guy's house for a year. Hello, we all know what happened. We know she's contaminated. She can't be our queen. That ain't going to work. Okay, well then Sita says, I will go through fire to prove to you that I did not engage in any intimate act with the demon Ravan. I am pure. She walked through fire. Who brought her out of the fire? They have this beautiful painting of somebody carrying her out of the fire. Have you ever seen it? Who was it? Agni. Agni Deva, the fire god. He carried her out. She's untouched by the fire. Presented her. She is pure. You know Agni, don't you? You know that word? We have that in English. Ignite. Ignition. That's from Agni. Sanskrit's everywhere. Okay, I gotta wrap it up. Too bad. So, Ram's famous for three things in particular. Number one, defeating the demon, Ravan. That's why God comes in his avatars and incarnations to reestablish the principles of religion. He's famous, number two, for rescuing Sita. Rescuing the pure goddess. Rescuing, protecting, maintaining, taking care of, respecting, regarding. That is the man's role with his wife or with his partner. And if he doesn't behave in that way, then something's not right. And the third thing, being a just ruler. He was an enlightened king, an enlightened monarch. I already told you the symptoms of living under an enlightened monarch. So, would you do us a favor, all you nice householders that are married and producing children, please produce an enlightened monarch for us. Please have an enlightened child who will lead us out of the darkness and will be a highly conscious being filled with the grace of God. Please, someone, do that for us. We are in desperate need of this. Okay? So what is the truth behind Ram and all this? I didn't get a lot of chance to speak about it. Is anybody who ever met him loved him? So is that the qualification for the enlightened monarch? I dare say yes. That everybody must love him. How in the world would everybody love him if he did what? If he loved everybody. That's it. Okay. Jai Shri Ram. Any questions? I had so much good stuff here. Ishwara. Yes, that occurred.
Why did the people of the kingdom not believe Ram?
Because one man, well, this is one of the reasons that's given. He is asking why did there was a point in the future once Ram became king and Sita was the queen that something happened. You see, in this context with Sita and Ram and enlightened monarchy, it is everything that takes place in a kingdom, the buck stops here. The final responsibility is that of the ruler. So you can say, well, this happened, but it's not, Prime Minister or the ruler or the king can say, well, that's not my fault. No, it's all your fault. Because it's your responsibility to maintain order in the kingdom. So what happened was one man's son died at a young age. And that caused some doubts. And people begin to talk and gossip, as people do, as we know. And they began to say that Sita is not pure. And we cannot accept her as our queen. It wasn't formally stated, but the king always has spies among the people. Nowadays they're called pollsters. They take the poll. And found out that the people were unhappy. And so she was actually taken from the kingdom. And went to live in an ashram with Valmiki. Anyone else? No? Manudas.
Just one other... hope not too controversial question. Just that, like our experience of monarchy, our experience of any type of politics at the moment, or any type of government, has always been that one person you know, or a very select amount of people end up with a lot, and everybody else kind of pretty much suffers in a certain sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And although we, I know in Krishna consciousness, we tend to invoke like a golden age, or we talk about a golden age, or for instance, in this instance, how Ram is such a wonderful ruler and so on. Is I'm just asking the question: is it possible to have a scenario, or you know, that would be satisfying to the general people, or is it just something that you'll only ever aspire for or dream about? Or
that's a real good question. So, is it possible to have a kingdom in some way like the kingdom we're talking about here in the modern age? Well, it's not just, yeah, I said I'm going to contradict this a bit now, on the shoulders of the ruler. Yeah, but you see, if the people aren't also evolving and becoming enlightened and are spiritualizing their lives and are representative of truth and honesty and integrity in their work and their actions, then who do you expect to get as a leader? Because you attract to yourself what you deserve, unfortunately, or fortunately. So if we have leaders who are cheaters and they tell lies and they misinform us, if we are doing a similar thing in our own lives and our business dealings, etc., what do you expect you're going to get as leaders? So it is also incumbent upon the people, us, the citizens, to become better people, to step into a higher a standard of truth and the expression of our dharma, of our purpose. So what can we achieve? We can achieve, are we all as strong or as weak as our weakest link? I would say that if we had a truly enlightened leader, which we don't, would that not, what, when the tide comes in, do not all the boats rise? So I think that's what it's there, but what would happen. But it's still our duty to improve ourselves. As we all rise through our own efforts, would we not then be in a position to attract a leader of greater ethics and morality and truth? So I think it has to go both ways and not just hang it all on single person, you know. And we are getting buffeted by the waves of Kali Yuga, but again, you know that one. Yes.
What's wrong with having an elected leader?
Nothing's wrong with having an elected leader if the leader is enlightened.
But can people just then say, well, you're not enlightened, so we'll elect someone else who is?
Yeah, but historically that's exactly what we do. Right?
I mean, if the king is there, what onus is on the king to act in the interests of the people?
Well, I'm not saying a king, like it has to be a monarch like Queen Elizabeth or somebody like that. You know, I realize I am in Ireland. I don't mean it like that. It's more an enlightened leader. And it was set up, going back historically, back this far, as a monarch. So, no, it doesn't have to be a monarch. It could be a person that comes from the people. Yes, absolutely. But he still would have to be an enlightened person. If you can elect somebody like that, if you can find and elect somebody like that, fine. But you're talking here about an ancient form of government that I don't know if you can give an example similar to this, where it worked on this scale or on this level.
Extol the golden age in
the past. Sure, it's easy for me to do that.
But I'm not saying it's easy for you, but it's easy for us all to do that, to go back to the past as being some kind of with rose-tinted spectacles.
Yeah.
Because like when we're grappling with problems of the present, that's where we're all proven to be frail humans.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't argue with that.
So it's kind of futile then to expect there to be someone who is...
Well, yeah, I guess. Well, you can say it's futile. I mean, I talk to people all day long, every day, and have done for 38 years, for example, who tell me that they really hope to get a wonderful job or have success in a career, or they want to find a marriage partner and find happiness in marriage. I hear this every day. I'm sure you do too, in your own work, in your own life. Is it futile for them to hope for that?
No, but it's probably better to take responsibility for our own happiness yourself rather than
project
it onto a perceived, you know, enlightened other person.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I'll go for you in terms. I'll go with you in terms of projecting it onto someone else and expect the other person to take responsibility and not you. I think I pointed out fairly clearly that you too must take responsibility for your part in it all. But at the same time, there should be an expectation that we can have a leader that is honest and truthful and can raise us up in some meaningful way. Not just economically. You know, you could say, well, here in Ireland, you had the Celtic Tiger. It was rock and roll time. Everybody was doing so well. And then the bottom fell out because there was something about it that was untenable or artificial. It couldn't maintain. Why didn't the leaders make some decisions around that? Why didn't they take the advice that was given them? Is it too much to expect? I'm asking you.
Well, I mean, did they get the right advice? I mean, there was like maybe 100 different competing advisors.
Okay, why didn't they make the right decision? So, you know, I mean, we can go back and forth and around.
Yeah, that's difficult one time.
So, you know, I think it's okay to expect a better leader and a more enlightened leader. I don't think that's unreasonable. But I think we need to be able to attract that. I know this isn't the Silver Age, Prabhu. I know it's the Iron Age. But if we just put it off on everybody else, like you say, and expect the leader to do it, and we don't take up our duty in response to that, it's not going to happen. But I think we should still want to hold out for something better. You know? And not just accept whatever is foisted upon us. And at least we're not under a dictatorship.
Or present monarchy.
Yeah, or present monarchy. So, okay? Any other questions? Time's rolling on.
Okay.
Little kirtan?
Yeah.
Hare Krishna.